E2. Number 2B.
We call those two categories indices. The singular is index, and the plural is indices. So from now on, we will no more speak so much of categories, but we will talk of the index that goes vertically and the index that goes horizontally. And so we'll speak about the index or plural, the indices. So I introduced to you the terminology, and I would like you to take the terms down and remember them, so that when we speak together during this week, we can use this new terminology, and each one understands what the other is speaking about. So we have to learn a new terminology, just a few terms, and see that then we can use them in the science of being. So when we talk in the future about matrix, we should be careful not to talk too lightly about matrix, just because we represent some findings in a rectangular form. Just to have a rectangular form with entries does not mean that that is a matrix. Only when we can define our two indices clearly, and therefore can define the place value within as a point of intersection of these indices, only then can we call such a representation a matrix. Else they are just tabulations or charts. So when you see something represented chart-wise or tabulation-wise, don't just think this is a matrix, because what is important about the matrix is to know what are the indices, and second, to see if the point of intersection of those two indices are defining the values in each box. I just go one step further, and then I think we have more or less our terminology which we will use. And I would like you to use that terminology during this week. We can now ask, how do we represent a matrix when we just want to represent it in symbols and not as a rectangular array? We can, so to say, not show the whole matrix, which may be a very big array, but we can define it even shorter, or even very short. In other words, what is the formula of a matrix? The formula of a matrix naturally must be adequate to our definition of a matrix. The definition of a matrix, which says it is a rectangular array with two current indices, that's another definition, which you don't have on your paper, which says that the matrix is a rectangular array. You can see that the matrices which we made were rectangular arrays with two current indices. See, for instance, in that example of the workers and the machines, one index was workers, and so you put that index in the current way, namely from A to B to C to D, never leaving the tone of having workers there, or the index machine 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Again, it's a current index where you never leave the common denominator of machine. So it is a rectangular array of two current indices. Therefore, we can see the formula for a matrix is very simple. It would say that if our subject, which is under consideration, is symbolized with a capital A, that's the subject, whatever the subject is. In mathematics, you just say the subject, and they usually use a capital A for that subject and say that subject is represented in two current indices, and so they use symbols for each current index. Namely, they write in double subscripted lowercase letters I and J. So when you see this formula, you know at once this is a matrix. So you can reduce any big matrix, whatever it is, into that short formula of A, capital letter, and subscripted in lowercase I and J. Now, you ask me, why that? Now, you know, I bet from your school years that in mathematics they use symbols, letters from the alphabet, sometimes from the Greek alphabet, and use such letters in order to indicate all over the world the same thing. For instance, you remember, say, that you had in geometry a little r for radius, or you had, say, little c for the speed of light, or a little t for time. So in order to write time or speed of light, all over the world, everybody knows, the scientist knows, the mathematician knows, the chemist knows, that when there is a little t, it means time. When there is a little c, it means the speed of light. If it is an f, it means the function of. If there is a little k, it means the constant of, and so on. And so, practically every letter in the alphabet is used. And in matrix calculation, they had to find two that are following each other in the alphabet, and so they did choose I and J. To indicate what? What do they mean? So in that formula, the capital A means the subject under consideration. Say, in that example which we have done about the workshop, A would be the workshop, the organization of the workshop. The little I is therefore used as a convention among us as the index for the columns. So it is the column index, and the J is the line index. You see how they are shorthand symbolization for the whole matrix. Say, if you look back to our workshop matrix, capital A is the workshop organization. The I would have been what? The workers. They were the columns, the workers. That which is above that diagonal line in the upper left-hand corner. The J is the line index, that which we have as machines. They are lines, though they are written one under the other in the vertical line, but they are read horizontally. So you can say that what you write on the top is always the I, and that which you write side is the J. So you can see that as we go on during this week, and as we will talk about any matrix, in the science of being, we'll have to ask, what is the I index? What is the J index? And then we can spell it out in our terminology. Now, I have to make a remark here, namely this, that in mathematics they have a convention that is a bit different than ours. And later on, when I explain to you our matrices, I will show you why we have chosen another convention which is also legitimate in mathematics. But why should we use another convention than in mathematics? I'm only mentioning it because when you talk on these things with a mathematician, he will say at once, but look here, you have it all upside down. Because in mathematics, the I is really the line index, and J is the column index. That is their convention, not ours. But the theory of matrix states that you are absolutely at liberty to put it the other way around, because it doesn't really matter whether I take the lines or the columns first in the formula. It is the same matrix. But for us, it has a certain value, because we give to the first of those two indices the dominant tone. So always remember, the I is, so to say, the dominant tone. So perhaps you write that down, meaning that when we talk about any place value within the matrix, and therefore have to define that place value through those two indices, namely as a point of intersection, we always use the vertical, the column, as the first and dominant one, and the line always as the secondary one. For instance, if we speak about the Word as the Christ, then the Word is the dominant and the Christ is a subtone. When we speak about the Christ as the Word, then the Christ is the dominant and the Word is the subtone. Always the first is the dominant, which we write on the top of the matrix as columns, and therefore we always reason in that way. And this is important to see, because if we do not take notice of that, and somebody comes along, as it has happened within our field, that suddenly one nice morning they make a matrix and say, I take now the horizontal as the dominant and then the vertical as the secondary, then we don't understand each other anymore. So we must somehow state our convention. Every science does that. Every science has conventions and symbols. And we have to do that because John Dorley started that way. And once you have started that way and for 25 years have used something, there is no reason to overthrow it. One should go on that way, or people will no more understand the earlier writings. And I will show you tomorrow why it is that we started to have the I index as the dominant and the J index as secondary. It has a very good reason why we think that way. And actually, it would be difficult to think the other way around. Some further explanation about matrix, and then I come very soon to an end about all these terminologies. You can see that the I, the column index, can have any number of items. For instance, we go back to the workshop. The I index had there four items, namely workers A, B, C, and D. But you know that if we would have a fifth one and a sixth one, we just could enlarge that matrix. So the number of the items in an index can be from 1 to n, that is to infinity. And the same is true in the J index, that you can have any number. There, we had 7 machines, but we could have 12 machines or 17 machines. This means that, and this brings us to a further point, it means that if the number of items in the I and J index is the same, then we have a square matrix. And this is the matrix we use very often, namely the 7x7 matrix. The I and the J have 7 items. Or the 4x4 matrix. There we have 4 and 4 in every index. And so in that way we get a square matrix. The moment we have an unequal number in I and J, we get a rectangular matrix. So you have a rectangular matrix. Your matrix about the workshop was a rectangular matrix, a 4 by 7. And in Christian Science, we will have that too. You could even have just a matrix where there is only one item in one of the indices, so that you have, say, a 1 by 4 matrix. Just one column with four lines. And in Christian Science, we began really with that kind of matrix, though we didn't know it was a matrix. But that's a line of reasoning which brought a lot of information to our understanding. Or we can even reduce it further back and have but one line and one column, and then you call it a scalar matrix. A scalar matrix. It naturally is not very interesting. But if you have the infinite one, you really have a scalar matrix. Yes. So I think this is as far as I can go at the moment. With this, we have more or less defined our terms with which we can work. And so I want to stop here because the next subject takes us longer than what is left on this tape.